Most of us don't think much about going to the tap and getting a glass of water, but having high quality drinking water is something that people around the world and even in other parts of our country here don't have the luxury of taking for granted. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're going to be taking a look at the health and environmental issues surrounding our groundwater today, and we have two great guests to help us understand those issues. Jeff Helmuth is the Source Water Protection Program Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Jeff, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, thanks, Larry. It's really great to be here.
Chuck Warzeka is the Bureau Director for the Bureau of Environmental and Occupational Health in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. And Chuck, welcome to the show.
Great. Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Jeff, what are some of the big, let's go back in general first and talk about how you would rate the health of our Wisconsin water.
Well, Larry, I tend to be kind of a glass half full person, so it's fitting in this case. I think that Wisconsin has an amazing groundwater resource. We're one of the few states that relies as heavily on our groundwater resource, and we've been able to manage, provide safe drinking water to the state for a long time. However, at the same time, because we have so much of the state dependent on groundwater, it makes it that much more important to protect and have shows like this to make sure people know what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It was about 70%, isn't it, of our people in the state rely on groundwater?
Right, right. And maybe 30%. The remaining is all on Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, Lake Winnebago.
Yeah. Jeff, what are some of the biggest threats to our groundwater?
Well, we see threats from a lot of different sources, but I'd have to say the biggest threats are bacteria and nitrate. These are things that are very commonly found in groundwater and in drinking water wells. And in a statewide way, too. So, whereas we have a lot of other types of threats that are, localized one way or another, bacteria and nitrate are the two biggest threats.
And so, obviously, health concerns there, lots of health concerns in those areas, I expect.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We've got, I know a lot of concern has been expressed over time relating to things like arsenic and heavy metals. How are you?
Yeah, arsenic and other metals have been found in various places. Arsenic fairly widespread, although not in a large number of wells relative to how many wells there are in Wisconsin, which is actually a very, very large number. We're talking about 11,000 public water supply wells and over 800,000 private wells in
wow.
the state. So when you hear stories about impacts to a few wells, you have to keep in mind it's usually a pretty small percentage of the total amount of groundwater use in the state. But yeah, arsenic has been a problem that came to light 10, 15 years ago from various geologic sources, although there are some incidents of human-caused arsenic contamination in water. It's most of what we see in Wisconsin is from the rock itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's been a rather difficult problem to address because of that.
Well, sure. Yeah. Well, another area that I checked that I think demands a little conversation is the area of pharmaceuticals in our drinking water. How did they get into the water supply?
Well, it's kind of an emerging area. It's been out there and kind of known about for better than 10 years, but we haven't had a good handle on how widespread it is. But if you think about how pharmaceuticals are formulated, the drug companies basically put together the dose, in mm-hmm. each tablet, knowing that only a certain amount of that is going to get absorbed by the body. The rest of it kind of passes through us, and if it's not designed, if our wastewater treatment systems and septic systems aren't designed to take it out, which they're not, then it can get into the environment. And so that's why we see that, as well as a big part of the concern and something that people have the ability to take some action on is unused pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. You know, how many of us haven't gone to the medicine cabinet and seen something that expired, you know, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Right. And so the tendency is for people to open up the caps, you know, the canister and dump it in the toilet and flush it down. And, well, you just sent it out into the environment. And there are better ways of handling that. And so depending on the materials, there's pharmaceutical take-back programs that are really similar to the hazardous waste clean sweeps that you'll see out there.
Yeah, and they have them in many, at least the larger communities,
mm-hmm.
Throughout Wisconsin. Talking today with Jeff Helmuth and Chuck Warzeka. Jeff's with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Chuck directs Bureau Director for the Bureau of Environmental and Occupational Health with the Wisconsin Department of Health and Health Services, talking with them today about groundwater. Yesterday was Protect Your Groundwater Day. We actually talk a little bit about that, and certainly invite your questions and comments. Are you concerned about your drinking water? What steps you need to do to protect your groundwater? Those are some of the things we're talking about. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org with a question, or go to my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Chuck, are there some symptoms that we should be aware of that may indicate a problem with water quality?
Well, if you start back at the first list that Jeff read off, bacteria and nitrates, you know, thinking of bacteria contamination, that tends to be when surface water is getting into your well, you know, through a cracked casing. The things that we're concerned about, untreated surface water tend to contain the microbial contaminants that can cause a lot of GI illness, the stomach flu that people talk about.
Yeah.
And those tend to come in, you know, a day or two after exposure, and so most people think it's what they just ate. Well, that can be also from your drinking water. So when you're thinking about the types of symptoms, that first tier of things that keep us, kind of separate us from some third world countries, it's the quality of our drinking water and the lack of these gastrointestinal diseases that we have. So that's kind of the first tier. Second thing that we're concerned about, the nitrate exposure, we're most concerned about infants and pregnant women because of the effect of nitrates on that population. But everybody should be concerned as well, and that's involving reproductive health, you know, successful pregnancies and kids being healthy the first 6 months or more of their lives.
Yeah. Lots of time, but lots of people online with questions for you guys, and I think we should probably go to the phones again. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Mark in Monona, turn to you first. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and thanks for the program, Larry. A little over 6 years ago, the Marshfield Clinic, under the direction of researcher Mark Borkhart, completed a study of municipal groundwater supplies or municipal water supplies drawn from groundwater in central Wisconsin. And it turned out that all of those municipal water supplies contained viruses that made people sick. And the 2 budgets ago, there was a provision put in that prohibited the DNR from being able to require sanitation of those municipal water supplies, which I'd like your guest to comment on.
Well, okay. We will turn to Jeff for that one. Jeff, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, Mark, I'm glad you brought up that study by Mark Borkhart. That really opened a lot of people's eyes. In fact, that research was really nationally and internationally recognized as some cutting-edge work. We're, you know, really happy to have Mark working here in Wisconsin on these mm-hmm. issues with us. The study did show widespread prevalence of viruses that can make people sick in some public water supplies, and that was alarming. And it's something we've seen in other studies as well, and that's something that we're reacting to now still in terms of how to best address that. The viruses in that case seem to be coming from the distribution system. There have been other studies that have shown that viruses can be coming in to the wells themselves. So it's a tough one. Disinfection is the good preventive technique to take care of the viruses. It does work. Chlorine does kill viruses. So the systems that do disinfect their water are protecting their customers from those viruses. Then the legislative act to not require that disinfection was impacted by a lot of other considerations, economic being probably the primary one. I can't really speak to that decision, but you know, in terms of what DNR can do, we implement the laws passed by the legislature, and we're doing our best to do that, and we're helping communities to make good decisions on disinfection and try to enable them to do the best job they can.
Yeah. So I have a lot of communities that were using, were chlorinating their water. Are they not chlorinating their water now? Or has it resulted in much change as far as you know?
No, I think basically what it did was it allowed the communities that weren't disinfecting to remain that way. It is a very significant
upfront cost
to start disinfecting. So I think that was the primary driver of that decision.
Hmm. Thanks, Mark, for calling. Appreciate your call. Lynn in Eau Claire, turn to you next. And thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. It seems to me that water is a very, very precious resource, and every time I take a shower, I feel guilty that most of the planet can't. And I'm wondering why people with, I live in an area where there's a lot of people are fastidious about their lawns, which is not an edible crop, and it seems like the people with sprinklers are also the people who use heavy applications of herbicides and pesticides. And why are they not charged a premium? My husband and I employ rain barrels.
Mm-hmm.
We don't water our lawn. We use rain barrels to water food crop.
Mm-hmm. All right. Comment, Jeff or Chuck, who wants to go?
So, Lynn, I think it raises a great point. And so a lot of what we do when we are taking care of our lawns or anything that we're doing around the house, we don't necessarily always know what the impacts are on the groundwater or the environment. And so I think the point here is that some folks tend to see the bag of pesticide, and they think if a little is enough, then a lot might be even better, and don't follow those label application rates. And so we really encourage people to do that. The regulatory piece is a little bit more difficult to get a handle on. So trying to enforce something on an individual property level, we found just doesn't work as well as increasing awareness like this program does. At some point, you know, you do want something with a little bit more teeth, but we don't really have an angle on how to manage at the individual level. But certainly just the awareness of how much you need, if you need any at all, and in most cases you don't. So I think Lynn's point is that most of the time we don't. And so if you really don't need to add the fertilizer or the pesticide to your lawn, don't add it. Most of our lawns tend to turn brown this time of year. And in fact, it'll turn brown faster if you fertilize it and we get a drought. So
yeah. Well, and then just the watering, too, that she commented on the watering. We never water our lawn. It just goes. And the lawn specialist, the horticulturist, all say that, you know what, the lawns are going to survive. And unless it's a brand new lawn that mm-hmm. requires watering to get started and going, otherwise you don't have to water your lawn. It's not going to die.
Sure. And I think water conservation is something that we probably need to talk more about in Wisconsin. We do have a very plentiful resource, but in some parts of the state, in some localized areas, it's a little less plentiful than maybe we think. And so it's good to be focused on conserving water. And I think maybe Jeff can add more to that.
Yeah, Jeff, you had something to add?
That's a great point, Chuck. And that's really part of the groundwater protection equation, the quantity side of it. It's not just about quality, but it's about the quantity. And the two are related. So the less water we use and the less we need to pull out of the aquifer, the less we have to treat, the less we have to actually manage. So, and there are a significant number of communities in Wisconsin that have run into groundwater quantity problems as well as quality. So we're seeing that in Waukesha, and it's probably the highest availability case there. But yeah, so it really does. And even for the private well owner, if you're pumping a lot of water, you're drawing that water in from a greater distance and have a larger area to be concerned with protecting. So it works all the way down to the small scale.
Chuck Warzeck of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services and Jeff Hellmuth of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources are guests today as we talk with them about our groundwater, yours and mine. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned because at 11:45, we're going to hear from folks involved with the Great Lakes Week, which is going on right now in Milwaukee, among other places. But for the moment, we're talking about our groundwater with Jeff Hellmuth of the DNR, Chuck Warzeka of the Department of Health Services. And you can join in. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's go to John in Brookfield next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've just been listening to you on the car radio on the way back from doing some shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic word nitrate was mentioned. And this year, I think, there's 3.9 million acres of land growing corn in Wisconsin. And upon that land is spread ammonium nitrate fertilizer. Round about, I understand, 20 pounds per acre. And of course, a lot of that runoff gets into the Mississippi and adds to the Dead Sea that we are seeing growing in the Gulf of Mexico. So what is being done about the making sure there isn't excess ammonium nitrate spread on the land that is used for growing corn in Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's turn to Jeff.
Hi, John. Thanks for your question. That is a huge issue for not just the DNR and health services, but the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection as well. There is a program called Nutrient Management Planning, which gets at water quality associated with agricultural practices. And nitrate is one of the major concerns of that program. That's one of the ways that we're trying to get at that. DNR also has a nitrate initiative going on where we're trying to look at that specifically in the Mississippi Basin to prevent that dead zone that you referred to in the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, we're working with all the other states in that basin to try to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus going in there. Huge issues. Agriculture is a big part of the Wisconsin economy, as well as a lot of other states in that basin. So it's something that you have to work with the agricultural community on. We have been trying to implement nitrogen application practices that are supportive of the crops to the level that they need to be supported, but not in excess of that. And that is not an easy thing to do because it's not necessarily known exactly how much nitrogen is needed. And there's a perception among a lot of farmers that, well, if a little bit is good, maybe a little bit more just to be safe is better. So, and it's a tough call on exactly how much to apply, but there's been a lot of good work done here in Wisconsin on how to establish those numbers, and the University Extension Program has done just that. So we're relying on those numbers.
Yeah, and, you know, frankly, most farmers I know, they don't want to spend any extra money than they have to. So they're and nitrogen's expensive. So, you know, you start putting it on several hundred acres, it can add up in a hurry. So I think most of them, their heart's in the right place certainly.
Absolutely.
And I'm sort of heartened by some of the technology out there anymore, too. You know, a farmer I know has got the machines that he uses out in the fields know how much any particular foot of ground in his field produced from 1 year to from the previous year, and literally will adjust the input of fertilizer or whatever as he goes through the field. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So I'm hoping that someday maybe everybody's going to have that and even better when it comes to planting corn.
Yeah, I think you're right, Larry. That's the technology has really come a long ways in the last few years, and there are tools out there to help farmers apply just the right amount of nitrogen and not too much.
Yeah. Yep. Good points, John. Thank you very much for calling. Chris in Sun Prairie, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm glad you're having this program. I'm hearing about water quality, but I'm wondering, what about water quantity? I have some real concerns over the frac sand mining industry that is just pulling tons of water out of our state, and the high-capacity water wells that are going to be implemented in June of next year. And then we have the Pinokies up where we have the mining that's going to turn our water to acid. So I'm very concerned about things, and I'm also concerned about the weakening of the DNR. I was up at the Pinokies at the last hearing that was up there for the DNR, and I asked the question, if we had violations of water quality standards or air quality standards, or have the ability to put a stop order in with these companies, and the answer was no. So I have some very big concerns about legislation that's being passed in our state that's going to take the water out of our state. We need water for our farms to exist. I mean, we're an agricultural state here, and mm-hmm. we also need it just to live. So anybody speak to that?
Comments? And Jeff, you want to start, since it's a DNR
sure.
sort of oriented or related question?
Sure. I'm sure Chuck might want to chime Chuck's, in on
I'm sure
these
he's eager
too.
To get in this, too.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of points raised there. I'll just try to take them in order. It seemed like the overriding concern, though, was the quantity of water available, particularly for agriculture in the state, and how frac sand mining and the metallic mining that's been proposed up in the up north in Ashland and Iron County might impact that. And I think you have to look at these sites, these frac sand and metallic mining sites, as to, you know, where are they, and are they really going to impact the quantity of groundwater at much of a distance? And our experience and science tells us that these are fairly localized concerns, and that's not to play them down, but there are some myths out there about groundwater that if you put a well in, your well is coming from an underground river from Lake Superior, and that's absolutely false. Water from a well is generally coming from very close to that well. Like a high-capacity well could pull in water from maybe as much as a mile away over a period of time. But that's really a stretch in most cases. It's coming from much closer than that. So even a large operation like a metallic mine is not going to impact much agriculture, because there just isn't much agriculture up in that area of the state. However, I don't want to downplay the concerns that have been raised here, because groundwater quantity concerns are significant. And you could have, from that metallic mine, you could possibly have impacts on the surface water resources in that area, drying up streams and so forth. And that's the kind of concern we're looking at in any application for that kind of work. The mine that's been proposed in that area is in the very early parts of the application process. This can go on for years. I don't think you have to worry about your water turning to acid in the near future, because there are a lot of provisions in our process to prevent exactly that. And with the frac sand mines, that's something that's just been exploding lately because of the fracking done in other states, where we're seeing, well, we find out that Wisconsin has the perfect sand for frack sanding, for fracking, and it's going out of the state willy-nilly. There's an incredible demand for it, and the mines are mostly in the western part of the state. We're seeing a lot of applications. This is not something that's just being done randomly whatsoever. It's being looked at. We're responding to it. We're looking at water quality and water quantity impacts from these types of facilities. So I hope I've covered it. I'm sure Chuck probably
Chuck,
has something
to add. Chuck,
you
want to add to that?
Well, just specific to frac sand mining, I have noticed from what I'm hearing from my colleagues in local health departments around the state, we're seeing more interest in adding groundwater monitoring to their permit requirements around frac sand mines, just to look at and make sure that we aren't having an impact broader. And so Chris's concern is one that a lot of people have shared, and there are ways to kind of build that in up front as the mining sites are developed to keep an eye on and see that there aren't unexpected impacts, and certainly that if anything is seen, something can be done. We can react to them. So those are the kinds of questions, the ones that Chris has raised, that we'll be looking at with any kind of new activity going into an area, changing land use, that how is that going to change the hydrology that could affect access to good quality and enough quantity of groundwater to folks. So we are asking those same questions.
Sierra in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the timing that related to the mining. I've been wondering about this for a long time. We are so connected by water in this state that I was wondering how long you think it would take for any potential pollutants from these proposed and operating mines up north to reach southern Wisconsin, considering that one of the mining presidents at decade or so ago admitted that they have no way to clean up any accidents or leakages if this stuff hits the groundwater.
Turn to Jeff.
Sarah, I'm assuming you're speaking of the proposed iron mine in Iron and Ashland counties. And I think I can address that, and that the mining operation that might go in up there would largely or almost entirely be only affecting water within that watershed, the Bad River watershed, in that general area. We wouldn't expect there to be any impacts in southern Wisconsin or even central Wisconsin, or likely anything more than a few miles away from the mine site. So that's not to say that there wouldn't be impacts in the Bad River watershed. There likely would be, and it's our job now to find out what those might be and to address them as best we can.
Yeah. Thanks, Sierra, for calling. Linda in Prédisac, excuse me, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if you could enlighten us on what water protections there are from sulfuric acid. Because I'm aware in both Minnesota and Michigan, where they have taconite mining, that there's ongoing water violations, even with dry stacking. So what technology are you aware of that you could tell us about that could protect the public from some of the sulfuric acid runoff and the heavy metals that are leached from the sulfuric acid?
Mm-hmm. Chuck?
Well, you know, Linda, I'm not sure that either Jeff or I know the specific processes that'll be used for that type of activity, so we may not be able to answer your question. I know that the acid mine drainage potential from any mining site is always taken into consideration by our colleagues at the department and the engineers that do this work. But unfortunately, I can't speak to the specific steps that those folks would be building into the permitting process.
Hmm. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your call. We had a caller from Chicago. This is a totally different kind of question in a way. He wanted to get rid of chlorine from drinking water. And he pours a pitcher of water and lets it sit overnight. And he thinks that that takes care of it. His girlfriend says he's nuts, or he's, the chlorine doesn't evaporate. Can you settle that dispute?
Well, I won't speak to whether or not he's nuts, but he is right. Chlorine will evaporate out of water if let sit. You know, whether you use a filter, you know, like a Brita water filter or any other kind of brand or that's out there, or an inline filter that most people have on their refrigerator water dispenser. Those things will remove the chlorine as well. But just letting it sit is the simple way, and you know, open it up and it'll off gas. It does evaporate.
I can just hear him right now saying, "Yeah."
Yeah, but note, I didn't speak to whether or not he's crazy. Otherwise, won't get in that dispute.
Mike lives in Madison, has copper pipes that carry drinking water. He heard that a study found copper intake by humans may lead to Alzheimer's disease. Does he need to filter his water with copper pipes?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm familiar with the study. I know that we don't have a definitive study that has identified a causal agent to Alzheimer's disease, though a number of metals have been of interest to people. Specifically, copper may not be one of the ones that I'm most familiar about talking or hearing about, but certainly too much copper isn't a good thing in your drinking water. And so if you have copper pipes, usually we expect that there's a little bit of lime buildup on the inside of those pipes that's natural and good that prevents the copper from leaking into the system. And I know that the City of Madison Water Utility does a really good job of monitoring for that because they've had some experience with this issue over the years and have had to kind of manage the water quality to make sure that it isn't too aggressive and doesn't cause too much leaching. So if he's in that system, I think odds are he doesn't have too much copper in his drinking water. Another way to deal with that is to make sure you run the water a little bit before you draw that water for your drinking water, and then you're getting water that's coming out of the system and not necessarily his newer copper pipes.
Yeah. Dennis emailed and has a well 15 years old. It was tested when it was drilled, and he'd like to test it now. Probably should have been testing it before 15 years went by, to be perfectly honest. So this is a kind of a perfect, I think, lead-in for you to comment on that, Jeff.
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. We recommend that private well owners test their well every year for nitrate and bacteria. And Chuck may add other things for other areas of the state. But, 15 years is really a long time. Things can change, not just with the groundwater quality, but with the well construction. So, you should test your private well every year.
And how do you do that?
Well, there's a number of ways of doing that. There are a lot of laboratories in the state that can do that. And I'll refer you to our webpage where they're listed. The easy way to get there is just go to our webpage at dnr.wi.gov and type in laboratories or labs, and it'll bring you a list of licensed labs in the state that do various tests. Now, as to what to test for, we have a nice webpage on that topic. Probably more than one now that I think of it, but there's the What's Wrong with My Water site, which is very helpful in diagnosing well water quality problems. And then, of course, there are DNR staff across the state that they can help you with specific questions. But, I'd just like to put in that plug for well testing, and that's really the main thing a private well owner can do to protect their water quality and their health.
And, and to help their neighbors, too. You know, you want to do the good by everybody. And I think there are other things that you need to, that each of us can do to sort of help protect our groundwater. Maybe we can talk about a few of those things.
Just to close out on the what to test for a question, one thing that many folks on private residential water supplies don't know is that no one else is testing their well. Unlike the rest of the state, and that's more than two-thirds of the state's on a public water supply, they're getting their water tested for them, and they're assured of safe drinking water at the tap. The private well owner is the only person who's able to do that for themselves, and most people don't. We really want to improve the number of people testing. And just like you mentioned, Larry, when someone tests their well, if it's a nitrate problem that could be an area-wide problem,
yep.
they're doing a service for their neighbors as well by raising awareness in that area. So some of the things that people can do to protect their well are listen to programs like this that talk about, you know, how pollution gets into to groundwater and to understand what it is that they do that can have an impact. You know, things like the hazardous waste clean sweeps, the pharmaceutical clean sweeps, managing the materials you're putting on your yard, as one caller earlier brought up. Just being more cautious about what you're doing on this land surface that can be related to the groundwater quality, because yeah. you do have an impact.
Absolutely. And you were going to add to that, Jeff.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that people can do to protect their water, both if they're on a private well and if they're on public water. And in addition to getting it tested, you can have your well and your water system professionally inspected, and just to make sure that it's competent and doing what it's supposed to do. And you can have that done by a well driller or pump installer or other groundwater professional. And be aware that most potential contaminant sources are close to your well, because your well doesn't pull water in from a great distance. And I'm speaking of private wells in mm-hmm. particular here. Also, if you have a septic system, make sure that's inspected and cleaned regularly. And be aware of hazardous materials, as Chuck has already mentioned. You got to store them properly in a secure place. And read the manufacturer's recommendations for application. Dispose of them safely. And what is a hazardous material? That's not real clear to a lot of people. Here's just a short list example of what hazardous materials there are out there that could impact your groundwater. Paints, solvents, used motor oil, antifreeze, pesticides, thermometers with mercury in them, switches, fluorescent lighting, computers, televisions, cell phones, the list goes on and on.
On and on.
So we have to be careful with how we use and dispose of those materials.
There's we got an email from Melon Hayward, who said that, reminded us about the Yellow Jug for Drugs program in some local pharmacies. It's a Great Lakes water protection effort and of pretty great value, where people can turn in their drugs to the pharmacies, and they will, you know, then from there on get rid of.
Yeah, and that's a great development that is occurring more recently due to some changes in state and federal rules around managing pharmaceuticals in general. Having the pharmacies kind of take some partnership role in managing this waste stream, since they're already a kind of known and trusted source of access to the pharmaceuticals and to advice about how to manage their use of them. So that's great. I think there are also pharmaceutical clean sweeps associated with a lot of law enforcement agencies. Yeah. Rock County, I know, has a drive-through. A number of places have different types of access points. So usually your county websites, doing a search locally, will give you an idea of what's available in your area.
Well, guys, it's been a real pleasure. I want to just note that the things, Jeff, that you were talking about, the different sites and the information, we have that all up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you didn't get that written down from Jeff, why, just go to my Facebook page. You can link right on to it there, and hope we can do this again. That'd be great to have you back.
Thanks again for having us. This has been great.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Jeff Helmuth is the Source Water Protection Program Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Chuck Warzeka is the Bureau Director for the Bureau of Environmental and Occupational Health in our Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Great to have them back. We've been learning, I think, a lot about what goes into protecting our groundwater in the state. Coming up, we're going to talk about protecting and managing our Great Lakes. We'll hear from two folks from the DNR who are working on Great Lakes Week, which is going on right now. Big celebrations and big events going on in Milwaukee. Next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.